Well, it's very nice to be reading here. Thank you. Big thank you to Joan. Thank you. Wow. Very nice introduction. Thank you, Jimmy. Good to see you. I'm going to read four poems, but maybe three. The first one's kind of on the long side, so it's three pages. About two years ago, July 2013, I got to go to Vilnius in Lithuania for a couple of weeks. And some of you probably know there is a woods outside of the city, about 6 miles outside of the city, called Ponary. It's like a public state park where people before World War II commonly picnicked. And when the Germans came in 1941, it became a place where they dug a big pit where it's believed there's about 100,000 people who were shot in the back of the head and shoved into the pit. So it's very unpleasant material, and which in some respects many of us have, if you're roughly of my generation, you sort of grew up with people who had a lot of familiarity with the name of Hitler, and I can remember conversations with my mom like, why did he do all that stuff? And he was just crazy, which is, you know, it's not a very satisfactory answer. And so I did find myself being in physically, geographically in that part of the world, wanting to come more to terms, at least in words on paper, than I ever had with these kind of questions like, how did this unthinkable stuff ever happen? And mainly in the back of my mind, and I expect I'm not alone if when we think about these things, like where would I have been if I were a young man in Germany in 1939? What would I have done? What would I have figured out about what was going on? This is called Stopping by Woods, and it's not a short, it's three pages. Please bear with me. Stopping by Woods. Whose woods are these in which I stop beside a stone? It's huge, how much I don't know. In here, don't go alone, says nobody. This stand of birch, bark like aged parchment, as if a tree could speak, as if you hear wheels of a wagon creak with its load of carcasses down the rutted path, darkened evening of these woods. Who owns them? History, revolving wheel of many spokes unspoken, whose bodies burned to make a polka, leather boots black with hobnails and heel plate. Light enters, specks of stardust expanding, scream of history. My father drove a Sherman tank into Germany, 20th Armored, crossed the Rhine near Bonn, crashed through Munich and on like a spike to the ethereal dark heart of Bavaria. For that eagle seen to float by thinking man, the intricate Alps are a single nest, said Wallace Stevens. About war, my father seldom spoke. One night after gun smoke on the radio, lighting his pipe, click of his Zippo, flame and smoke, memory of gray uniforms, Waffen SS, trained for immolation, death, the given quantity of every equation, fear flared in his eyes. It was twilight, tank quieted, coffee cooking on a campfire, K-rations, spam and graham crackers, a Chesterfield, a rifle cracks and drills a hole into the neck of a man next to you. The shot you won't hear round the world or anywhere is the one that puts you under a hill far away. Sniper, silently stalk the killer among you, tease him, headless helmet on an M1 butt, pray to see a muzzle flash, wriggle worm-like, kiss the earth, taste dirt, search for clean space, clear shot, protracted crash of a body down through branches, straight shooter. My father could stop a galloping bunny with his 22. He came home with an 8mm Mauser. Never the same, said his mother, tears rising, his face changed. How, she couldn't say, lacked words for innocence used up, less than 2 years, and almost all fun stuff, boy stuff, good stuff, gone. Before he's 20, the Mauser, his deer rifle, in my closet, cartridges, he hand-loaded, black powder, lead slugs crimped in brass casings, unsayable crimped-in things go off, his belt unbuckled, made red welts on my buttocks. He'd cry and say, this is how I love you. This is how I love you. His barracks and foxhole buddies, Duke, Johnny, and who knows, were with him as he leaned back in his recliner, half asleep, dying from cancer, a wolf gnawing on his larynx. He mumbled and laughed with him. No one but him visible in the room or anywhere. On a siding, they saw the last train that came to Dachau, 40 boxcars of skin-covered skeletons in striped pajamas. Sometimes, awakened from nervous sleep 3 a.m., I think of the rifle in my closet to lift and shoulder it as if to aim out my window that overlooks the street. I should mention it's Carson Street. Overserved boys and girls howling at each other in the night. Fuck you, bitch. Fuck this and that. Children, I've been one of them. Whose woods are these? Tribalism and primal fear. How do I arrive here and know these woods as they are part of me? Darkness falls in Vilnius. Shadows of the forest linger behind the crooked stairwell, 3 steps into the wall of silence and forgetting, past the threshold of memory into what's past, fully sighted and still blind, lost and stumbling most of the time. And you, click, light floods from above. Many things come only from above, and which direction exactly is that? Yes, please, a drink of water. Thank you. Sit with myself a moment, breathe. Thank you, human fucking being. When I go into the woods, I'd like to know what happened to me. Thank you. All right, Jimmy, this one's for you. This one's called A Boy Scout. It mentions Lord Baden-Powell. Most of you probably know he was the man who got the whole Boy Scout movement started in Britain. A Boy Scout is not a smiley face cookie, even if he looks like it, with a green smile and vanilla icing cheeks and a forehead with no eyes to see beneath the surface of gentility, schooled as he is, and how to be obsequious for the boss, win approval of smiles and uncles, win approval of aunts and uncles, non-air-conditioned lifetimes, cold dawns, moody cows, rust that comes to visit the plow and tractor, harrow and fence wire, not enough binder twine, silo close to empty of silage. A Boy Scout is what comes with holding up your hand to swear an oath and fail utterly to appreciate that to put on a brown uniform and red neckerchief and say, I'm trustworthy, is not, generally speaking, a good way to create trust. And you swear you're loyal. Any questions? Says the flat-topped drill instructor, jabbing his nose into the nose of the next Boy Scout fresh recruit tensed at attention. I didn't think so. That's loyal. And you swear to be helpful, even if the silver-haired lady at the crosswalk doesn't want a helping hand, wants to sink her teeth, the real ones she has left, into the fleshy part of your extended Boy Scout palm, you'd still like to give her a smiley face cookie because a Boy Scout is friendly. Would you like to join my fraternity, he asks. Would you like to buy one of these A1 pre-owned cars? And you're courteous, of course. Virtue related to courtliness, which means essentially avoid giving offense and includes sometimes to be coy, even flirtatious, since not to flirt back when flirted with may be discourtesy, as when your charming hostess smiles and flashes her Ava Gardner green eyes and your mind flashes on Ava's great one-liner. Deep down, I'm very superficial. You won't hear that from Lord Baden-Powell. And Boy Scout is kind. Like my friend Bob, the Eagle Scout, who enlisted patriotically in 68 and came home after Tet to take pot shots at FBI agents on the Wounded Knee Reservation. Be kind. Philo of Alexandria is said to have said, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. And obedient. To whom or what? In general, I'd say you're better off to forget that one, if you can, except to obey always the bumper sticker that says question authority, and be cheerful about it. Why not? As in, I cheerfully disagree with many people much of the time about almost everything, such as when I swore as a Boy Scout to be thrifty, and my mom said, that's what we had to be. It makes a nice rhyme with nifty and means something sort of prudent, Puritan, and unexciting as buying insurance. But if your mom is a moderately sized blue planet and you love her, thrifty is worth thinking about, says Earth to Major Tom. And be brave. Are you brave enough to be yourself? And what does that mean? What makes you think you even have a self, oh little person? Oh, particle of nothingness. Oh, anti-particle of nothingness. Be brave and clean, as in once upon a time, and reverent. Just kidding. So thanks to Jimmy. I'm going to close with this one, which is an elegy for Galway Connell, which I never would have written, but for the fact that Jimmy came forward to support the idea of doing a memorial reading that we did at the end of March for Galway Connell, magnificent poet, as many of you know. And this poem kind of rummages around through a lot of Galway's work. Some of you will recognize some of the bits. And it refers to Selma. There's a photograph that's all over the web now by an Alabama photographer named Charles Moore. It was unknown until after Galway died. Galway was at one of the Selma marches after the original Selma march and got badly battered and bloodied from one of the state troopers. And he never talked about it or wrote about it that I know of. So this is called Back You Go Into Your Crib. From an oat farm plot near the Green Mountains, a fringe of ryegrass waves goodbye to the poet. Hello, says cold clay, completing a wave of the planet's being, echo from deep ocean murmur of humpback whale and the gopher frog's night ride of croaks and glottal stops and the whittled sharp end of a wolf's rib waves hello to intestines of the bear who swallows it and lurches crawling over ice. Hello, says blood smell to the hunter who goes inside the bear as mind within a body, besotted with seeking to track the flesh-dripped trail, follow it even from Selma, take the charge of horse-mounted, uniformed hatred, crash of hickory baton on ocularis orbital, hello, eyeball bone, fleas on the bodies of men, laugh as men are afraid to laugh at their gods. Tenderness toward existence, did it arrive as a wave of Irish rye? The departed poet is not departed. Sheep laurel and mountain cranberry afternoons, flower herding on Mount Monadnock. What moved through him as he lifted his daughter from scream of what nightmare from her crib to hold her and to write words that waved as I lifted my daughter and sang her to sleep in my arms, song comforted as she who birthed me, frightened by fierce lights zigzag and sky roar out of myself, sobbing, lifted and comforted me. This animal I inhabit will die quietly, I pray, with tenderness such as the poet brought to alchemize the ashes of his daughter's cradle back into wood so that grease in the wheels of progress could not slide. And the angel of time receding into the future, even as it stares transfixed with what rushes away into forgetting, stills itself, if only a moment. Thanks.